I'd like to start off this morning by thanking every one of you that started your day off by deciding you were going to assemble at the Lord's house upon the Lord's day. For choosing to be here, your mere presence is an encouragement to me and everybody else here. And it's proof that you don't have to be on the program to inspire others and be edified yourself along with worshiping God. Now, I'd like a show of hands of how many people here like surprises. How many of you want more information? Because normally it is human tendency to think surprise, oh, that's a good thing. But life teaches you that surprises in life aren't always good things. So usually, those of us with any age or life experience will answer the question of how many like surprises with, I need more information. Am I going to get a raise, or is my furnace going to quit in the middle of the night? Surprise either way. You just want a new car. Are you and your kids are going to be sick with the flu all weekend? Can you relate to that, Ginger? You can probably relate to the first one as well, right? In the Old Testament, the Lord helped Israel win several battles by surprising and confusing the enemies. The attack on Pearl Harbor was successful because of a string of communication errors which allowed it to become a surprise. Now, I love each and every one of you here today and think of you as my brothers and sisters in Christ. And I want to see a smile on each one of your faces come Judgment Day. Even if the judgment is later this afternoon. Have you ever thought about that early in the morning when you get up and plan your day's activities after lunch, the judgment? We don't think that way, do we? We don't have a tendency to plan on the judgment being today. As things stand right now, many of those people that I would like to see smiles on the judgment day aren't going to happen. Why? Because many among us have, for various reasons, remained undecided, non-committal, and non-baptized voyagers in a world that is ready to eat you alive. You are here in body with us today, but you haven't signed up your spirit to be with the Lord. And it has brought me to this point that I am going to give a lesson today that I don't want to give. But I'm going to do it because I love you. Brother Tom, I was very caught back by what he picked to read this morning. Because two of the verses out of Jude are what I would like to base the beginning of this lesson on. And I appreciate him picking that particular passage as our reading today. Jude verse 22 tells me to try love and compassion. And when I go on to verse 23, it tells me, and others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh. I told you I'm going to give a lesson today that I didn't want to give. And I'm going to tell you things about my life that I don't want to tell. And I may tell you things about this world that you may not want to hear. But if it reminds any of you of what lies in wait for the lukewarm in heart that Revelations 3 verse 16 refers to, when the Lord spits you out of his mouth in disgust and condemns you to hell, if it wakes one of you up, it'll be worth it. so that when you get done with your lunch, you're ready for the judgment at 2:37 this afternoon, when every knee shall bow, every knee shall bend, every head shall bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus is the Son of God. And for the record, I didn't predict 2:37 p.m. I want you to be ready at 2:37 p.m. Up to now, I usually don't get freaked out. I don't scream. And I don't usually get terribly startled by much of anything at this point in my life. I just look at what has happened and say, how do I react? Right now, I am worried about the future of the church. And I'm going to risk what people think of me by telling you things you may not know about me. And perhaps you'll think I'm a klutz, you'll think I'm unlucky, or you think I'm just stupid. But I choose to believe that the Lord has watched over me for 58 years and has protected me from myself. I was raised on a farm. Farming is one of the deadliest occupations in the world. I've spent my entire life working at some of the highest risk occupations around. After leaving the farm, I got into metal fabrication, heavy machinery rebuilding. I played the part of a lumberjack, cutting saw logs and firewood. I troubleshot industrial equipment breakdowns. I run the ammonia refrigeration system at the dairy, operated boilers, calibrated gas burners with 2- and 4-inch gas lines, and operated up to this day bulldozers and excavators. And I've pushed myself physically to the limit much of my life, working a regular job and a business on the side because I wanted my wife to be able to be a full-time mother to her kids. And although my intent in doing that was good, my choices looking back probably should have been different. I spent 12 years working nights while my children, two oldest boys, were growing up. They'd be getting off the bus when I went to work. And depending on how late production ran that night, I got off work at every night of the hour. Every hour of the night, I'm sorry. And there was no set time when I would get off work. It was as late as production run. And I have fallen asleep driving home more times than I can even guess the number of. I have woke up in the median of Highway 163. I have woke up on both shoulders of the highway going to Runnels and to Carlisle. And I woke up looking straight ahead at another driver because I was in their lane. I have left work after midnight and had multiple encounters with drunks. After 1 o'clock on Friday and Saturday, 1 out of 4 are estimated to be under the influence that are in driving. And I may be the only person you may ever know who's had 2 wrecks in 8 hours' time. I never got a ticket for either one of them. And I had the same deputy sheriff investigate both accidents. And it's a little embarrassing when the deputy shines his flashlight in your face and says, "Dave, is that you again?" And this second wreck should have killed me. But a seatbelt saved my life at 18 years old. While owning a 60-acre timber in Lucas County, I had at least 3 episodes that should have killed me, but the Lord delivered me and said, "Not now." In 1984, an out-of-control truck driver hit me head-on when I was in my little car, which probably could have killed me, but God said no. Dad used his tractor to pull the car and the truck apart. They were lodged together. In 1979, as an inexperienced troubleshooter at Anderson Erickson, I was trying to learn how to operate the ammonia refrigeration system at night by myself. And I made a mistake one night, and I was within seconds of having an ammonia line blow up in my face. But the Lord said, not now. In approximately 1990, I did have an acid line blow up in my face. I was fortunately within two steps of a washdown station and was able to save my eyesight. In the 1970s, I had molten metal burn through my pants and fall into my boots and scarred both of my feet. In the 1990s, while backing up a dozer, I went over the edge of an embankment, and it should have rolled over on top of me, but God said, not yet. This is not a complete list, but it's enough to show you that I should be dead. With the close encounters of the Dave kind I have experienced, I have heard Audrey say, why am I still here? I could say the same thing, but just for a different reason. I believe the only reason that I am still alive is that it's the Lord's will. I have encountered so many near misses, I should be dead. But evidently the Lord still expects more out of me. I am hoping that there is someone left for me that I can help. Maybe someone I can help be more prepared to meet their judgment. Because there's nothing else that I can think of that really matters. None of these things that I've just related to that have happened in my life scared me as bad as what I see now. I see hesitation and non-commitment, just as I read about in Acts, the 24th chapter and verse 25, when we read about Felix talking with Paul. And as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. If you're waiting for a convenient season, you may be waiting too long. I beg of you to listen to this old man. I have smelled my own flesh burning. I have felt the pain from my own flesh burning. And on such a small scale, it does not compare to what it will be, what I smell and what I feel when the judgment comes. In Hebrews, the second chapter, verse 3, it says, how will you escape if you neglect so great a salvation? You will answer for either what you did or decided not to do. The lack of religious studies in those under 40 years old has made it easy for this country's moral opinion polls now to swing so much in the last 15 years that 54% of this country's general public now support gay marriage. At least that's what the media claimed last week. Now, history teaches that countries with long stretches of freedom and prosperity are lulled into a false sense of security. And the young generations are then set up for disaster because they have not experienced adversity themselves and don't know how to deal with it when it comes. A full-blown depression in the United States gave what we call the greatest generation, which included Audrey and my mother and my father, Vernon McClurg, Carol Warren, and Roy Ballinger, as I know he was in on the invasion of Normandy. It gave them the grit to survive World War II after they survived the depression. In the last 2 months, our Secretary of Defense predicted that the next Pearl Harbor would be a surprise, being referenced to a surprise attack, may come over the internet because almost everything built today has a computer or a microchip. Your car is controlled by a computer. The traffic lights that you come to at the intersections of the street are controlled by a computer. Their traffic controllers operate the flights with a computer, and the airplanes themselves run with a computer. Trains and even my bulldozer have a computer. The fuel pumps at the gas station, the electricity that comes to you is distributed with a computer. Are you aware that the world powers, including our enemies, are believed to be developing and may have already developed types of electromagnetic stratospheric bombs that will detonate, when detonated in our airspace, would disable anything with a computer? We live in a very unstable world full of unstable people that hate Americans. And just because you are a teenager and are born in the United States, you have no guarantee you will see tomorrow. Just because you are in America, you are not completely in control of your life. And with the coming of 2013, I believe we are now in a period of world history where our youngest generation may be more likely to die by decisions made by others than ones they make themselves since World War II. We do not have total control of our daily life. Time and chance will happen to us all. We can do everything right, and someone else's bad decision will still get you. Yesterday, a friend told me of her mother-in-law that had worked all of her life at John Deere for over 30 years, had spent over 10 to 12 hours a day there, and the family finally talked her into retiring so that she could enjoy life instead of working all the time. The day she retired, on her way home, a carload of teenagers were playing chicken. And they dared the driver to turn in front of her. "You can make it." And they hit her head on and killed her. Her day was controlled by others. You will have days that are controlled by others. We all know the greatest example of the power of one is in Christ offering himself in our place for our sin. And the story that I'm about to tell you should not be mentioned in the same breath as what Christ done for us, but it is still one that you better learn from. I just learned this part of history last fall from a show that I watched on Channel 11. And I can't remember the name of it, but I'm going to refer to it as the power of one. How many of you knew that without the firm action of one Russian sailor, that none of us in this room today may have existed in 2013? Did any of you know that? Does anyone know the event this might be? It happened either in 1961 or 62. I was only in third grade, and I don't remember what the show said. And all of us, at least the older half of us here, know what the Cuban Missile Crisis was. And so you may know about that part of world history, that the conflict between the U.S. and the Soviet Union over having nuclear missiles on in Cuba. But the part that I did not know was in this story on Channel 11. The U.S. and Russia was in a stand down with both sides thinking about how they were going to counter. And we had a new president, a young president, John Kennedy. The Russians had Khrushchev. an old man that thought he was smarter than Kennedy. And when the U.S. found out about nukes in Cuba, there had to be a stand taken. John Kennedy's military advisors wanted them to strike Cuba, even if it meant obliterating them off the face of the earth. The Soviets had a submarine headed for Cuba through the Atlantic Ocean, which had nuclear weapons. We intercepted that submarine. And it was surrounded and was going to be forced to surface because it was a diesel-powered submarine and it was running out of oxygen. He had to come to the surface. It was a diesel-powered submarine with nuclear weapons. That submarine's captain could not fire a missile on his own. There was three men that had keys. All three of them had to agree to fire that missile. Two of them had their keys in place, ready to fire. And the third officer, the year before, had served on a nuclear-powered submarine that had had a major failure in its reactor and killed much of the crew the year before. And this officer had to help remove sailors out of that submarine that had been exposed to the radiation. And he was so shaken by their physical appearance from the radiation exposure that he could not stomach okaying the firing of that nuclear missile. The firing of that nuclear weapon would have started World War III. And the possible end of life as we know it on Earth. The power of one man possibly saved mankind of a physical death. He had no power to do what Christ did. He died a few years later from the radiation he was exposed to when he carried those fellow sailors out of the sub. About 3 weeks ago, a meteor blazed across the Russian sky at over 30,000 miles per hour. It blew out windows and knocked down brick walls and knocked down buildings, causing panic and chaos. And it was never mentioned in the stories that I heard, but how many Russians believe that it was the United States beginning a nuclear attack? The power of one stopped a nuclear war in 1962. Someday the mistake of one could ruin your day. Don't let that mistake be the one that you make by staying noncommittal. I am not in control of everything around me, and neither are you. And if you go into this afternoon without the blanket of security that the Lord can provide you, you're making a foolish decision. The Lord is going to return for the judgment day, no matter what our enemies do or don't do. Almost persuaded. Almost, but lost. Luke chapter 11, verse 23 says, "If you are not for me, you are against me." Mark chapter 8, verse 38 says, "If you are ashamed of me, I will be ashamed of you." Don't go the rest of the day unprotected. I beg of you to analyze your vulnerability. You don't have control over all things in your life, but you have it right now. You can make a commitment to God and breathe easier this afternoon. Please come forward and start your life with Christ. Put Christ in your life as we stand and sing.